The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yesterday was an auspicious day in our calendar, but it seems to kind of pass without even anybody noticing it. Yeah. In Hebrew, we call it Kaftet B'November. There are streets that are named after
the states. Well, I was just going to say, the only reason I even knew about this is because I've noticed in Israel that there are streets called 29 November. And I asked the question as to why, what happened. Somehow, we don't really note it much, do we?
We don't note it much or not nearly enough. And of course, for those people who are wondering what the significance of the 29th of November is, Kaftet B'November, that is the day on which the Palestine partition plan was passed by the United Nations in 1947. A massive, massive day in our history, really a most significant day. And it's unfortunate that it kind of just rolls without anybody making much of it, because I think it's worthy of really marking the day with a massive celebration, because this was a huge day, a very important decision in our history. And the State of Israel is here today in its current form because of the decision that was taken on that particular day, or amongst other things. I mean, obviously there were a whole series of events that took place, but no doubt that that must have been one of the most important ones. And there are still people who are alive today, 73 years later, who remember the day. And, you know, for them, it was such a big event because of the circumstances in which world Jewry was in at that time, that, you know, this concept of the State of Israel coming into existence was just something that they couldn't have even conceived. So a very, very important day. And of course, another thing that we're not going to talk much about, but huge rains late last week, lots of flooding in Israel. Apparently they're going to do a practice run of opening the sluice gate of the Degania Dam, something that hasn't happened for 25 years.
Incredible.
And the significance of this is that obviously the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, has filled up now to such an extent that they are considering the possibility of opening the sluice gates and releasing water down the Jordan River and towards the Dead Sea, something which all of the people along that path, along the river, and of course the Dead Sea itself, could really make good use of. But as I say, for 25 years, that sluice gate has not been opened because there just hasn't been enough water in the Sea of Galilee to justify it. And now we're only really at the beginning of our rainy season, and already talk about the possibility of opening it. So also a very significant moment for us.
Yeah, amazing. The big story, of course, is the assassination of the head of the Iranian nuclear program on Friday. Massive, massive story. What do we know about this?
Okay, I'm going to say his name once because it's a difficult name to pronounce.
We've been practicing it on air. Nebuchle does it a lot better than me. I'm petrified.
Okay, so this is the nuclear program chief, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. That's what I'm going to say, Fakhrizadeh.
Right. Okay.
And his name has been mentioned before, not by me, but by people who've had their eye on him. Yeah. The United Nations, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and most famously in that speech by Prime Minister Netanyahu after the nuclear secrets were captured from Iran. Prime Minister Netanyahu mentioned his name, saying, you will hear this name again. And of course, that particular statement has led people to believe that his assassination was carried out by Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu did warn that this was going to happen. So it has, which happened on Friday. The thing for me is, I mean, obviously this man has done, a lot of damage to the State of Israel and to the general security of the world, countries around Iran and even further afield, through the development of the nuclear program that he has been the head of. And it's not only that he's developed a nuclear program which is, you know, I mean, nuclear power is used in so many different fields, which are quite safe. When I say safe, relatively safe, because nuclear power has its own intrinsic dangers, but relatively safe in the sense that they're used for civilian purposes rather than for military purposes. But our friend, Mr. Fakhrizadeh, has really been involved in developing ballistic capabilities for a nuclear missile, for nuclear, for the nuclear program in Iran, and hence the fact that not only the Israelis, but indeed the Americans and people from the International Atomic Energy Agency had their eye on him as well. And so I guess it's not a huge surprise that someone as high profile as him has been assassinated. The damage that he could have done has probably been done already. It's probably too little too late, in the sense that, you know, whatever he has achieved during his lifetime remains there. What fascinates me more than anything are these unbelievable theories about how the assassination actually took place. And you can't even believe that any of these stories relate to the same event, because they are so different in their nature. One story suggesting that there was a remote controlled rifle that was loaded onto the back of a truck, and that the remote control, whoever was controlling it, was the one who fired the rifle, you know, from a remote, from a distance, as the target got out of the car. They were apparently traveling in a convoy to some village, and somehow this remote control rifle was activated, killing him. And then apparently remotely the van on which the rifle was loaded exploded in the process. So that's one theory. Another theory says that there were groups of people, that there were 12 assassins who were waiting for him and who shot him and who dragged him out of the car and shot him again to make sure that he was really dead. And there was another, you know, so many different theories, and you can't even believe that they relate to the same incident. I don't know that we'll ever really know exactly what happened. There might be a movie in the making here. I don't know if we'll know exactly what happened, and I'm not sure that we'll ever really know who carried it out. I mean, the Iranians in the meantime have released photos of four people that they claim to have been somehow linked
to the assassination. I don't know any of them. None of them are familiar to me. I just want to make that very, very clear.
And none of them even look like you, Howard, so you don't, you didn't even really need to put in that disclaimer.
Right.
And they don't even vaguely resemble you.
They've all got hair as a start, but,
well, most of them. Some have got hair on their face, some have got hair on their heads. They've put out these four people. I mean, I have no idea who they are or how they could have been linked to anything. The Americans and some other European nations have immediately come out saying, we weren't involved. Israel has been particularly silent on the issue. Tzachi Hanegbi was on TV on Saturday night saying he had no idea who might have carried out this attack. And he's not saying that in order just to try to throw people off the trail, but he genuinely doesn't know, just in case we might have suspected that he wasn't telling us the truth. So, you know, this is just one of those things where I think messages are being sent. Message number one is, even the most protected and the most senior person is not out of danger, not if they live in Iran, that is. And so, you know, that is a very, very clear message that has been sent by whoever was responsible for this assassination. The second message is that we do know who the people are who are really pulling the strings and in charge of the things that are potentially dangerous to the state of Israel. I mean, if indeed, you know, Israel was involved somehow in this assassination, and I don't think there are too many people on this planet who honestly think that Israel had absolutely nothing to do with this, no knowledge of it. Israelis woke up on Friday morning, particularly members of the Mossad, going, How did that happen? I don't think anybody exists who honestly believes that.
To a greater or lesser extent, we know that Israel must have been, whether it was just about information, whether they were more actively involved. This is very, very clear. And the same applies to the United States, of course. Israel, if Israel is responsible for this, they certainly were not going to do this, I believe, without U.S. sanctions. attention. So
I tend to agree with that.
So you know, no matter which way we look at it,
who would have motive?
Correct. But no matter which way we look at it, this has got it's got Israel and the United States very, very clearly in its in its planning or action.
I agree with that, and more than that, of course, all Israeli embassies around the world have gone on to a heightened level of security and protection because there is an expectation that there will be some sort of a revenge attack. I mean, this is a strike at the very heart of the Iranian security service, at the heart of the Iranian hierarchy, military hierarchy, government hierarchy. This is a man who clearly had status, who had a lot of protection. Apparently, he traveled around with a convoy of people. They obviously knew that he was in the crosshairs, and they tried to do whatever they could to protect him, but it wasn't enough ultimately. So the damage, you know, the assassination has been carried out. The Iranians have been made to look really silly in the process. Generally, where these things happen, the nation, the country, or the individuals who carry out the attack try somehow to spare too much embarrassment by not going out and saying, you see, we got you. I mean, similar to what Prime Minister Netanyahu did when we managed to gain all of that secret information from the nuclear archives. He came on public TV and advertised it and really rubbed the faces of the Iranian people, the Iranian regime, in the fact that, we managed to get this right from under their noses. On this occasion, it's been very quiet, and I suppose there is a feeling that there might somehow tone down the revenge attack that is inevitable in order to try to save face. So a fascinating course of events that have taken place on Friday and since then, with lots of speculation, the Iranian responses. But we certainly haven't heard the end of the story by far.
No, I don't think we're going to for some time. Another amazing story is the Operation Tsur to bring home 2,000 new immigrants from Ethiopia has begun. How's this operation going to work?
This is an operation which makes me feel quite emotional. Mm. And the reason for that is because of the fact that it's being led by our Minister of Aliyah and Integration, Pnina Tamanoshetshata. She is a minister in our government today, and she was brought from Ethiopia at the age of 3 years old with Operation Moses, and she has now vowed to return to the country of her birth and bring home the remaining people who are waiting to make Aliyah, and she has carried out her vow, and she is now in Ethiopia. She has returned to Ethiopia this week. And on Thursday, we expect the first planes with some 500 people to be arriving in Israel with our Minister of Aliyah and Integration on board. And it's a very emotional story for me. Amazing. Because it shows how well she has done. It shows a little bit about how she cares about her people to go back to Ethiopia and bring them home. And I think that this is really something which is a credit to her. And I think the state of Israel should be immensely proud of her and her family and her achievements by carrying out this, because it's not been simple for her to fight against the rabbinate and against the government ministers. There's been a lot of controversy over the people who've been left in Ethiopia. Yeah. There's a civil war raging at the moment in Ethiopia. Those people who are there have questionable Jewish identity, and hence they've been left behind. Some of them have immediate family members, children and parents being left behind, while others have come to Israel because of this question about their Jewish identity and whether they really have the right to return under the law of return. Thanks to Pnina, she is initiating Operation Tsur. Ultimately, 2,000 people will make Aliyah, the first of whom will come hopefully later this week.
Just an incredible story, because it's really so circular, and that's what's so amazing about it, is that here's a person who comes from that, understands it, who has risen under very difficult circumstances as an immigrant in a society that wasn't particularly easy, and so the circle continues, and she perpetuates all that is good. It's really an
Absolutely.
Incredible story.
I mean, you know, there are many, many stories about our Ethiopian community. Unfortunately, not all of them are doing so well. Mm. Many of them struggle within our society. And there's lots and lots of stories about, taking to crime and petty criminals and not managing from a social perspective. There's lots and lots of challenges that the Ethiopian community has had to face in Israel. But I think ultimately, if one takes a step back and says, has this been a good idea to bring them from Ethiopia, from that level of civilization to Israel, to this culture, to this level of civilization? I would say yes. I think that they overall have been happy to be in Israel, to be Jews in Israel. Unfortunately, it's not been simple for them at all.
Amazing, amazing story. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow, same time.